Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, January the 19th, as we like to do on Sundays. We'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Obviously, the impeachment trial is finally here, and I'm sure the whole country has just been waiting for this during the entire vacation or Christmas and holiday. President Trump signed a couple of trade deals this week, and they're pretty significant. And I think it's interesting to see the contrast between a president signing trade deals and Democrats walking the articles of impeachment to the Senate. I just thought that was a very interesting contrast. The American economy continues to look good. Retail sales, the numbers were very good. The Democrats are headed to Iowa, which is very confusing. Nobody really knows who's going to win because every time they take a poll, they have a different result. And if you've been watching TV, especially all these football games over the last few weeks, we've all been introduced to this fellow, Mike Bloomberg, who seems to be running all these ads about everything that he's going to do for the country. So lots to get into tonight with our friend Bill Katz. Bill, last week we were talking about the possibility of you moving high ground because of flooding. I was wondering what happened.
Of course it's going to happen. We all know we all know that we're doomed because the little Levita from the Bronx has apparently bought a pair of snowshoes and an umbrella. And as soon as that happened, we knew this was real. Well, we know about these things in New York. But the reality here, kidding aside, is that we really have never yet done what is absolutely necessary on this question of climate change, which is to appoint a Challenger-style commission, the commission that investigated the Challenger accident, to report back to the president and say what we know, what we don't know, and what we must know to proceed on this issue. I think that is absolutely required because I don't know if the left would allow it, because the left's position is it's obvious. It's happening, and we don't have that long to go before we destroy ourselves. And the fact is, it's not obvious. There's a lot of technology being developed that even if we didn't do a thing about emissions, would dramatically improve our situation. But we really, both sides refuse to face it. The left is convinced that it's a hoax. The right is convinced that it's not only settled science, but that anybody who dares ask a question is anti-science and wants to go back to the Middle Ages. I think this is a subject that has been very poorly handled. You can't depend on the press any longer to do it because the press does not seem to have any real interest in its own credibility. It just goes along with whatever the left-wing established position is and ridicules anybody who disagrees.
Right. But what I thought was interesting, Bill, speaking of climate change, and by the way, I agree with you. I think such a commission would certainly satisfy someone like me who would like to hear something other than the world is ending in 10 years. I mean, that kind of crazy alarm doesn't persuade me, but I'm willing to listen to real evidence. But what I find interesting in this last Democrat debate and in all the Democrat debates, whenever they talk about climate change, nobody says anything about China. And if you're not willing to tackle China, if you're not willing to say to the Chinese, hey, China, you're going to have to play ball with the rest of the world and stop polluting and start respecting agreements. If you're not willing to do that with China, it doesn't really matter what we do. I mean, China is polluting the air in ways that there's really nothing we can do, Bill. I mean, we can clean our air, but eventually somebody's going to have to stand up to China, Bill.
Yes, and that is something that is asked about regularly, that there are countries in the world that sign these agreements or say they're in favor of fighting climate change, then never do actually fight climate change. We've been one of the most successful countries, as a matter of fact, in reducing emissions. We get no credit for it because on the political left, the actual result never matters. It's the ideology. It's the style. It's whether we feel good about ourselves. And you're absolutely right. We could do anything, and yet if you cannot get some of these other large countries to go along, it would be meaningless in the end.
That's right, and that's the whole point, that when you listen to these Democrats in these climate change debates, you get the feeling that we're the only ones in the world who do anything. I mean, lots of other countries, China, India is another country too that, you know, that pollutes a lot. So anyway, that's something that, you know, and then the moderators don't appear to be challenging them when they make these statements about climate change. The moderators either don't know or they have other important questions to ask, but nobody brings up the question of China, Bill. I just don't get it.
Well, I get the feeling that in many of these discussions that you have, the moderators are basically uninformed, uninterested, and uninterested in their jobs generally, and that they will just simply, again, accept what the party line thinking is at their news organization. And, you know, when you realize what is being asked of us in terms of climate change, which is the expenditure of trillions of dollars that could go for other things, I think we better be sure that we are right before we move ahead. And I don't see that assurance.
No, I think you're right. I want more information. You know, I don't want to hear, you know, stuff saying that the climate change is causing the fires in Brazil, and every year they have these fires. Now in Australia, or, you know, we're I agree with you. We need a commission. Bill, a couple of quick topics before we get to everything else. There's a lot to get into today. Martin Luther King Day is tomorrow. He was assassinated almost 52 years ago. A lot of people have actually been born since, so I remember the night that he was assassinated. I remember that night. And you have to wonder, I ask myself many times, when you look at Black America today, a lot of success stories, but a lot of failures too in many ways, especially the communities where many African Americans live, these cities run by Democrats. And I've come to the conclusion that many of the civil rights leaders have become nothing but partisan hacks for the Democrat Party. They're basically just carrying the water of the Democrat Party. So they oppose reforms like school choice that would be very beneficial to African American communities. They don't want to talk about crime or do anything about crime, which is the real threat in the African American community, like Chicago and Baltimore. They don't want to do anything about any real problem. They just want to talk about civil rights in the abstract, Bill.
I'm afraid you're correct. You know, you get the feeling with many of these people that, first of all, they're not in control of their own destiny. I think several have observed that there is actually today more activity, theoretically, on the part of on behalf of African Americans by white radicals than there is by Black activists. And it seems to me that the movement has become a kind of a toy. And second, when we're talking about the political left, which really is, in effect, in charge of the civil rights movement, people ought to look at these individuals one by one. And I think what they will find is that to many of them, any success is something to be feared, because of their success in any way, it displeases and disproves some of the theories on the left that there's no possible progress under capitalism. And, you know, you look at the leaders and you wonder why every year they ask the same questions about education. They come up with the same answers about education, that African Americans are in terrible shape, and yet no effective action is taken, even though we do know how to educate people.
Well, there's a brand new poll that came out. I don't know who did it, but a brand new poll, maybe you saw this, that 80% of Blacks are very pessimistic about the country.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there saying, wow, 80%, that's a pretty high percentage. But what exactly are they pessimistic about? I mean, were they optimistic 3 years ago when Obama was president? Because nothing much happened in those communities. In fact, more has been done under President Trump, at least in the sense that the economy's better and they have more jobs. But, I mean, everything else, the crime in their cities, the nature of their school, none of that has really changed or has gotten any more negative under President Trump than it was under President Obama. So I blame a lot of this on as I said before, on the leadership that just wants to, you know, bang the drums of racism, and it's all racism, but don't want to fix problems. They don't want to fix education. They don't want to fix crime. And you know, I'd be very pessimistic, too, if I was living in some of these inner cities, Bill.
Yes, I can understand that. And I saw that same poll. I'm skeptical of it only because there have been so many other polls taken recently in the black communities that show rising popularity for President Trump. And it does seem to be something of a contradiction if one poll says they're increasingly pessimistic and another poll says they are increasing their support for the man in the White House who they were told not to vote for. So I don't know how to interpret that data. But one of the things that I think we really have to look at is the kind of news reporting we get from these communities. They create a narrative that the black community is in very serious danger, that it may become extinct soon, and that it is the fault of the white radicals and the white newsmen. Now, I don't know independently which is correct, but it does seem to me that there is enough population in the black community to provide students for the best schools in the country to make real progress to study physics and math, engineering, the things that really matter to the future of the country, and that it's just not being exploited. It's not being done. I think we have a political liberal wing in this country, a leftist wing in this country, that holds that any progress is dangerous, any real progress is dangerous, and that the only thing worth fighting for, as you said, is the kind of social justice curriculum, which is not producing any results for the black community at all.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. I look at what Martin Luther King said in that I Have a Dream speech. I assume you remember that speech, Bill.
Yes, sure.
And it was a phenomenal speech. Anybody who watches that, you have to be moved. He was a great speaker on top of it. And when he said, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but he says, I want my children to be judged by the character, not the color of their skin. I wish they would say that to the Democrat Party.
Yes.
Because they're not following that example, Bill.
No, not at all. The Democratic Party today is destroying itself by identity politics. And under identity politics, the character of the individual doesn't mean anything. Only that individual's ethnic group means something. It's the exact opposite of what King taught, that the identity politics today means you have to have a certain number in each institution of this particular ethnic group or another ethnic group, and that equality be damned. Now, the best way, really, of achieving some kind of decency and equality is not to do that, which is just keeps people in place, but to go back to traditional means of judging communities and individuals, you know, by test scores, by refusal to commit crimes, by maintaining their community, the things that we know about and the things that we know work. And ask whether they're even being tried by many black communities, and the answer, it turns out, happens to be no.
Right, and the whole idea of excellence, you know, of expecting people to be excellent, rather than saying if you fail, it's because you're black.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's a terrible situation. So, anyway, Dr. King's birthday Dr. King Day on Monday. Well, something on Tuesday, Bill, we're going to finally have an impeachment trial, and I'm sure the whole country is just waiting for this. I mean, it's like a Perry Mason show that we've been waiting for all year long, Bill.
Well, yes, and I think that people must believe that they can call Ticketmaster and get a ticket.
That's right.
And they can go, and I understand there are going to be cheerleaders, the red and blue cheerleaders, and that John Dean on CNN will announce his decisions as to which side is acting more morally, as he did during the Nixon administration. I mean, this whole thing is, if it wasn't so serious, it would be a joke. I mean, if you have crimes to give us, show us where the crimes are, especially when you're dealing with the Democratic Party, which since the beginning of the administration has talked about impeaching the president before he ever had a chance to do anything.
Right.
I mean, I think Maxine Waters in California getting up and saying, impeach 45, impeach 45. No charges, no crimes, but just impeach
right.
45. And I think that's what we're seeing. I think the I'd like to look into the faces of some of the broadcasters who put this on live and watch them take a bath. Because I don't think there's much interest in the live hearings. And I'm hoping that the whole thing will just peter out after a couple of weeks. And they'll finish it and file a report somewhere. And we won't be bothered by them again. Because this has not been a real investigation. This has been a completely politically driven investigation.
That's right. Well, abuse of power, but they don't tell us exactly what crime he committed. Obstruction of Congress, which is a joke. I mean, if that standard, if that's the new standard for impeachment, every president who refuses to cooperate with Congress on everything is going to be impeached. It is really sad to see. It's funny because you go back, Bill, and you read what some of these people said in 1999 about the Clinton impeachment, and back then they were saying, well, you know, impeachment is a very serious thing, only for the most serious things. And these are the same people who are now going after President Trump. I think it's a big mistake for the Democrats to do this, and I really believe that they're going to pay for it. I really do. I think most people are fed up with this. They're fed up with investigations, and they want Washington to get things done, Bill.
I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, they send people to Congress with specific agendas. Everybody puts out his agenda when he runs for Congress. And they check back in 2 years and find that not only has the individual they elected done nothing, but his party has done nothing. And that, you know, back in 1948, Harry S. Truman talked about the do-nothing Republican Congress. I have a feeling we're going to be talking that way about the current Congress. It's a do-nothing Congress because the leaders in the House, the Democrats, don't want to do anything. They want more direct action against the man who's in the White House. And they, and
yeah,
they're
I mean, that it's amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. So while all of this is happening, Bill, you've got the impeachment, you got these leaders of or these impeachment managers walking the articles to the Senate. While all of this is going on, President Trump is signing the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement that most people said he will never do, but he's done it. He has begun the process with China. I mean, there's more to do, but he's taken big steps forward. Retail sales are up. All of the reports that I'm reading is that the economy in 2020 is going to be okay. I'm assuming, Bill, just my opinion, that if you can get these trade deals done, that's going to have a booming impact on the economy. Because a lot of people are sort of holding back waiting for the trade deals. But if they're done, you know, that's going to unleash even more economic growth, Bill.
It is. And one of the interesting things is that you talk about getting the deals done. Well, these deals are done with foreign countries. And I just wonder if there is a reluctance to do any deal with a foreign country before the election, because immediately the other side is going to claim collusion without any evidence. And that's possibly why the league seemed to be quieter this year than perhaps the year before. There's the old saying, well, I forgot the old saying. had it a minute ago. But you know, you look at these trade agreements and how much they improve the life of the average worker. You look at how difficult they are to negotiate. And one of the things we have to realize is that foreign countries that are involved in negotiations will either accelerate them or stall them during this impeachment period based on what they think the United States will do with the President of the United States. That's not the way it's supposed to work. We are allowing other countries to have traction against us by this silly impeachment case.
That's right. Now, something very interesting, too, and there's been some reporting about this, how President Trump's policy with Mexico is working very well. I mean, over the last few days, Mexico has kept people from crossing from Guatemala to its country. something that I think is clearly supportive of the United States. I mean, obviously Mexico does not want a bunch of people walking through their country coming into the United States. They actually don't want them in their country either. But I think this is clearly a result of President Trump negotiating with Mexico and saying to Mexico, look, if, you know, we can work together a lot better if you help me on immigration. So I think another big victory for President Trump, Bill.
I think it is too, very much so. And I think there may be a point in the not too distant future that many foreign countries are going to realize this man is going to be president for another 4 years. We'd better start working with him effectively. And that could really snowball. And here at home, I think that there are some editorialists who believe that what we are heading for is an absolute wipeout of the Democratic
mm-hmm.
Party. I mean, on the style of the wipeout of the Labour Party in England. If that
yes.
occurs, you could really have a political revolution in the United States as the left wing contemplates 4 more years of Trump judgeships. I mean, which may very well turn out to be the most important issue in the election. It's on the one hand, it's a dubious political period because the impeachment is such a ridiculous thing. But on the other hand, it's an absolutely gripping suspense story as to
mm-hmm.
what will happen and who will benefit.
Yeah. Well, I think that even some Democrats like President Obama are beginning to realize that, you know, nominating somebody like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren could be very problematic. I don't know who's going to get nominated, Bill. I think we've gotten to the point right now where nobody really has a clue. They have a caucus in Iowa here in the next, in the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Yes.
And every time they take a poll, there's a different result. So God only knows who's going to win Iowa, Bill.
Well, yes, and you know what is interesting about it, and you hear this comment made all the time, is that nobody really cares. I mean, there's no enthusiasm for any one candidate. Do you feel a wanting of Bernie Sanders? Well, maybe among some children and college professors, but nobody else. And if you look at the front runner, Joe Biden, he has more baggage than American Airlines. I mean,
right.
If he should get the nomination, the Republican Party, which is now very well organized, is going to come down on him like a ton of bricks. They really
right.
have not got a candidate ready for the presidency, and that is coming out more and more every day, but it could have a devastating political effect.
That's right. We're going to take a little break, Bill, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about the Democrats and Michael Bloomberg, who's on TV every 5 minutes. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just a reminder that our friend Carlos Geddes, we have a link to his website as well as his show information his website and schedule on the show information. So click on that and you'll be able to find out about his music and where he is playing around the Dallas area. Bill, just before we get back to the serious stuff, I just want to take a quick exit here and talk a little bit about baseball because – you know, stealing signs used to be an art. I mean, the guy at second base would be standing at second base, and he would have to, you know, instinctively steal the sign and tell the guys at the dugout, well, I think if he does this, he's going to throw a curve or whatever. But now we're using technology, and it's quite a scandal. Several players have been suspended, even fired. It's hilarious on one hand, but on the other hand, it's pretty sad because baseball doesn't need this. Baseball is actually doing quite well the last 2 or 3 years, and they don't need a scandal like this, Bill.
No, they don't. I think it's getting to the point that pretty soon they'll be stealing signs by mental telepathy, and I'm not kidding, reading the brainwaves of the opposing team. And look, you can't cheat in Congress that way, by reading the brainwaves of congressmen, because very few of them have brainwaves. Mm-hmm. But on the baseball diamond, yes, it's, look, the sports scene, the professional sports scene generally, is very discouraging. There is a tremendous excess of salaries. There's the involvement in politics by the NFL. There's the great lack of interest on the part of the American people in most sports. And I find it very tragic. I think that sports are very much a part of a nation's culture. And I remember back to the time in the 1950s when I was growing up, and maybe a little bit after, where sports were a centerpiece of life. If you were living in New York, mm-hmm. and had three baseball teams, you had better be loyal to one of them, or you, mm-hmm. could be deported. I mean, it was a terrible thing. It was terrible. Nowadays, there is a kind of general loyalty to a team, but not the level of enthusiasm and participation there was back then. Today,
yeah,
it's more of an exhibition.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. There's still a lot of passion in some places, but you're right. I mean, I'm really disappointed with what happened with the Astros, because without getting into the weeds of baseball, they were such a great story. The idea that they decided to do it the old-fashioned way by developing players, and they did. They developed a very good team, and they had a great farm system and all of that. And, you know, here we understand now that they were using videos to steal signs, and there's even an allegation that there was a player. And it's just an allegation. I want to make sure that's clear. An allegation that a player actually had something in his shirt that, where he would hear, you know, what pitch he was expected to, they were expected to throw him. Well, if that's true, I mean, that really is horrible, Bill, that,
yes.
that the game would sink to that level, or that, again, I'm always amazed when I hear about these things that there isn't somebody in the organization that says, that's crazy, guys, we don't do that.
That's
what
right.
amazes me, that there wasn't somebody in this.
Yes, and what's amazing is they don't realize that by doing this, there may be a short-term gain for the side that cheats, but in the long run, it's a loss for the entire sport. And
that's
people
right.
will lose confidence in it, and audiences will grow smaller. And who benefits from that?
That's right. Well, I know that I like to read the New York sports pages, because they're so much fun. And the fans in New York are really, they're very angry, because Houston beat the Yankees twice to get into the World Series. And they say they got cheated. Well, that's hard to prove. But clearly the Astros were cheating. There's no question about that. They were using
yeah.
signs. Whether that impacted the game, I don't know. You still have to hit the ball. But
that's right.
anyway, it's just not the kind of thing that the game needs. It's just like
NFL
a couple of years ago. The NFL didn't need the players engaging in political commentary.
Of course
didn't need
not.
It.
And I haven't seen a single social change as a result of taking a knee.
That's right.
I mean, there may be more business for dry cleaners, but that's probably it. And you know,
right.
it's a very sad state of affairs, because it takes away from young people something that
mm-hmm.
they used to, in a way, worship, in a non-religious way. I mean, young people, every young kid knew the players on the local home team.
Right.
There was a sense of belonging. Even though the teams were always businesses, they always had a kind of almost an amateur quality to them that
mm-hmm.
made them charming. And today, it's today you see a player pulling up in an $80,000 Mercedes, driven by a chauffeur. It's the kind of thing that turns people off. It makes them culturally indifferent to these events and to these teams. And in the end, that can do a lot of damage to the morale of the country.
No, I agree. I agree. And I think in the case of professional baseball, Major League Baseball, it was doing so well
yes.
for the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, there was a lot of enthusiasm, and I think this is going to hurt it a little bit. Let's get back to the Democrats, Bill, in Iowa. Like I mentioned before, the break, every time they take a poll, they have a different winner or a different person leading, which makes me come to the conclusion that nobody really knows what's going to happen.
No.
We're going to, you know, something, obviously somebody's going to win, somebody's going to come in second place, but nobody really knows, you know, what's going to happen. The only guy who knows is Julian Castro, who said that there were too many white people in Iowa. But other than that, nobody knows anything.
What a wonderful thing to say. I'm sure sure that he endeared himself to
that's
the state
right.
and should consider even moving there.
That's
you
right.
get that kind
the
of
same,
thing.
The same Iowa caucus bill, by the way, that nominated or selected Barack Obama. I guess there was no problem back in 08 with the white people in Iowa.
Well, yeah, and you get this kind of misinformation all the time. But, we're talking about the character of the nation and what is accepted. Now, as far as the primaries and your sense of dismay, which I share, at what's happening, that there's a new poll out every day with a new winner. I mean, it's like the old TV game shows. Everybody gets a chance to be a winner. I mean, everybody gets a chance to be queen for a day, or the winner to win, and Vanna White will spin the wheel for you. And it's being taken as purely a horse race. Now, the press is generally criticized for treating an election like a horse race, but they do it every time anyway, no matter what the criticism is, because that's where the viewers are. The viewer is interested in the horse race. But this is a very, very long election campaign, I think probably the longest we've ever had in American history, and I think we're squandering the chance to talk about issues of concern to the American people.
That's right, and I think it's going to be a lot longer than just normally by April or May we have an idea who's going to be the nominee, but I don't. I think that this is going to be a while before we know, because there's so many scenarios as to what could happen. So many things that could happen if this guy wins or that lady wins. They'll probably get to Milwaukee and not have a. That's my guess. They're going to get to Milwaukee and not have a Leaderville.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because then you have a broken convention. We haven't had a broken convention in decades. Now, you know, one of the things we ought to point out here is the National Party, the National Democratic Party, used to have a safety mechanism built into its nominating process, and it was the so-called, they went by a lot of names, permanent delegates, or special delegates, and they were delegates who by virtue of their position, were made delegates to the national conventions. They provided a kind of stability because they were regular members of the party. They weren't people who just came in once every four years to spend 3 weeks on a campaign of a presidential candidate, and they had some loyalty to the party. And the term is superdelegates, of course, and they've eliminated, I think, most of those superdelegates. Those superdelegates play really the role that the United States Senate does in national politics. They were the deliberative body. They were the people who knew a lot about the process, who knew a lot about history, and they weren't going to go to the convention and nominate a jerk. And now that safeguard has been taken away, and you have absolutely nothing to stop a convention from becoming a convention riot.
Yeah. Well, I read that 1952 was the last time that there was a brokered convention, that when the Democrats eventually nominated Atlee Stevenson. That's what I read the other day, that was the last time. Well, 1952 is a long time, so
yes.
Nobody has seen a brokered convention since then. But the problem is that this is not a very united party, Bill. And so you get to a convention and you don't have a leader – and let's say the wise men and women say, you know, we think that Joe Biden is the most electable Democrat, let's say.
Yeah.
Well, that may be what they say, but then the people on the floor say, well, yeah, but we need to put somebody as vice president to satisfy this other wing of the party, and that could be a real circus, Bill.
That could be a very, very much a circus, because I suspect that is exactly what's going to happen. That somebody is going to, you know, Biden may break through, get the nomination, but then he will be expected to appoint as a vice presidential choice one of the leaders of the grievance industry. It'll be an absolute necessity to get out of Milwaukee alive.
Yes. Well, there's a very interesting article today in fact, I saw this on Powerline. Maybe you saw it too. That President Trump somebody's warning the Democrats about Hispanics, saying that the Democrats are not paying attention to Hispanics. And then on the other hand, that the Trump campaign is really paying attention to Hispanics and really going after the evangelical Hispanics, which is a very big movement. Hispanics in general are very religious and conservative. And, you know, they're talking about abortion. They're talking about other family-type issues. And that you don't hear, I mean, when you watch these Democrat debates, family values don't seem to ever come up, Bill, unless you're talking about transgenders.
Well, that's it. I mean, you have a Democratic Party that seems to be increasingly at odds with the American people. They seem not to care what people think. You know, they basically are proceeding on the old left-wing principle of you don't need those miserable freedoms. We'll tell you what to think. And the sad fact is the party does not show much concern about that trend within its ranks.
Yeah. But, for example, let's say you get to a debate and the question of abortion comes up, and you know that Trump is in-your-face type of guy. You know he's going to turn around and say to whoever, do you believe that abortion in the eighth month of pregnancy is reproductive right? And Joe Biden is probably going to say, no, I don't. I don't buy that. And then if he says that, the party turns on him, Bill, because that's what the base – so this is the thing. And so the party is so disunited that I have the theory that the only reason they talk so much about Trump is that's the only thing they can talk about without knifing each other, Bill.
That's right. Well, that's absolutely correct. Look, we have a situation in the country now where we may have, in effect, a power vacuum after the November elections, that people are going to cancel each other out, and the actual power to move forward will not be there on the part of the federal government. I think this is really, I don't use the word crisis loosely, but I think we may be approaching a period of a political crisis. You not only have ridicule and people staying home, talk back to the candidates, not working. You also have people who, through sheer experience, knows where this leads.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. Now, one thing maybe you can help us, Bill, understand, since you're from New York, it seems like Michael Bloomberg is all over the TV. It seems like, you know, he's running his own TV show or something. But if you're watching these football games, there's a Michael Bloomberg ad in just about every break during the show.
Yeah. And, that's absolutely true.
And it seems the message from Michael Bloomberg is that he gets things done. He's the guy who gets things done. Doesn't quite explain how, but he's the guy who gets things done. He's going to provide this. He's going to provide that.
Yes.
And
he's running strictly as a pragmatist. And it worked here in New York. And he actually ran three mayoral terms and did a pretty good job. I think what you're seeing now is a recognition on his part and the part of his handlers that he got into the race awfully late, that he does not have the kind of name recognition he thought he would have, and that he's going to make up all this time by simply bombarding the airwaves with money.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem to be, Bill, it doesn't seem to be making him more popular, because when you look at the polling data, you know, again, polls can be unreliable, we know that. But I don't see any boost in his popularity. I mean, it's not like he's up there all of a sudden, you know, with Biden and Sanders. He's still way down where Beto used to be.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mention that, because we talked recently about the possibility that Bloomberg may have made a terrible mistake in getting into the race as an ordinary candidate, that he probably would have been much better off in forming a third party where he would have real power. And I'm sorry he didn't do that, because that would have been for some very exciting politics.
Well, he would have been able to, I guess he'd still be running these ads, but at some point, I mean, at some point he's going to have to get out and talk to people. He can't just run a campaign of ads. And
well,
when he tried to do,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, when he tried to do that in Texas, 45 people showed up.
That's right. And look, we have the following situation. We have a campaign that is inordinately long. It's boring. I mean, by the time we finally have an election, people will forget who the candidates are. This has really been a very, very awkward process. It probably should be shortened considerably. There probably should be a cap on spending and some means by which the process narrows down the number of candidates very quickly. We don't have any of those things in place. The Democratic Party is not organized as a national victorious political party. It just isn't, no matter what they say. And we are seeing the effects of that. And you mentioned the sales of women's clothing and how many of these excuse me, I lost the train of thought for a second. Go back a minute.
What we were talking about was the fact that what I said before was that Bloomberg was spending a ton of money on TV, and that's not really not getting him anything, at least so far. Then he came down to Texas. He brought Judge Judy with him, and he got 45 people in San Antonio.
Yes. And I lost the train of thought. That this has happened before, and it happened with Rockefeller back in the early 1970s. Rockefeller wanted to run for president, and he also wanted to run for president in the 60s, and he had a tremendous amount of money available, and it didn't do him any good because in the end, it is the voter who decides. And while money talks in politics, it may not talk as loudly as people think. Now, another one who had a great deal of money available to him was Donald Trump. But the irony is he didn't spend that much to be elected president in 2016. He was very frugal with his money. One of the things I think we should look for in this election is that the possibility that much of the way we poll the electorate might have to be revised. I'd love to hear some of the leading pollsters talk about why you see, for example, the following. A few days ago, a poll was released saying that African Americans are unbelievably pessimistic about the future of the country. Yet on other days in the same week, two or three polls will be released saying that the percentage of African Americans voting for President Trump is increasing dramatically. Now, those two things are completely contradictory. And I think when those polls come out, we should have a complete examination by polling experts on these television discussion shows saying how the poll was done and why we are getting these results. It could be the polling will be way off this year.
Yeah. Well, another example of a poll that doesn't make any sense, you know, one poll says that something, I guess, 50, 51% of Americans do not disagree with President Trump in killing this number two guy in Iran. But then the same poll says, most Americans think that he should have been killed. So it's like, you know, you get these contradictory results within these polls, and you're right. I mean, somebody's going to have to – I've come to the conclusion that a lot of these polls are – they're rushing to do these polls.
Yes, they are. And also I get the feeling that the polling industry is moving closer to what the newspaper industry has become, not an industry where facts are presented, but where positions are strengthened or weakened. And that everyone knows that the way a question is asked will influence the poll. And I am getting an uneasy feeling that the way the questions are asked is quite intentional and designed to produce a specific result in some of these polls. Because that really is one of the few things that explains this disparity of numbers that we're seeing constantly.
That's right. Yeah, sometimes these polls just don't make any sense. I mean, if you look if you look at what they like to call, you know, the internals or whatever, because they always ask a bunch of questions, they just don't ask one, and they don't seem to make any sense. But I would like to close tonight with you have a wonderful post today about how can civilization survive, Bill, especially now that Harry and the young woman who did, I can't think of
Megan.
Her name right now, Megan. Okay.
Megan.
How can civilization survive? So I thought maybe you could close tonight, Bill, by explaining to us how we will survive the loss of Harry and Megan, Bill.
I don't know if it's possible. I mean, I think that when you look at these two and realize that civilization's hopes rode on their fortunes, and their fortunes were considerable, and now they've decided to leave the royal household. how many months after their marriage, and that Prince Harry, who of course we look to defend Western values, to defend freedoms, apparently has been done in by an American actress who has gotten him to do all these things. You can't imagine that this would have happened had he not been married to her. I mean, she apparently has has cast a spell over him. I mean, one does not give up a royal position easily. You know, you can't get them back, and they don't make new ones. And here is a prince of Great Britain, and basically said, abdicating in effect, which is exactly what one of his relatives did back in the 1930s, Edward VIII, when he gave up his throne because he wanted to marry the American Wallis Simpson, who was divorced and had all of the things against him. And we thought we'd never see something like that again. And now we have this new young couple. And again, it involves an American woman. These American women seem to have a great sway over British royalty.
Either that or Japanese women over the Beatles, Yoko.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But yeah. I don't know how we go on like this. I think we really do discuss it here, by the way. And I think there's a general feeling that this is not going to end well for these kids. That it really isn't. That without that royal title, they really don't have anything. What do you say, Meghan Markle, the former princess who stopped being a princess, all of a sudden they went into business with her husband, who's dumb as a log? I mean, there's really no glamour left. The glamour is in the royal titles.
Right. And you're right. It is a shame that they walked away from it, because I feel bad for Harry, if for no other reason that I thought Harry's a pretty nice guy. I mean, here's a young man who 10 years ago, or whenever it was told not to go to Afghanistan because they were afraid of capturing him, and you know, turning him into a prisoner. Mm-hmm. But he said, "No, I'm going to go. I'm going to go with my guys." And he was a pilot, I guess, helicopter pilot or something.
Helicopter pilot.
And he went into battle and took a chance. And I thought that was pretty. I thought that was pretty good of Harry that he did that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so
Then he meets up with this actress.
Yeah.
You know, and she has mesmerized him.
Well, then let's hope that maybe he has. Maybe he's going to call his grandmother in about 3 months and say, "Hey, Grandma, you know, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Can we go back?" I wonder if she'll bring him back.
That's an interesting question. I'd love to be in on those discussions, but I think that we may, just as we've had a royal divorce from the royal household, the two divorcees, Meghan and Harry, may eventually. I mean, I don't know how these two can stay together. I mean, now that they're independent, she's suddenly going to look around and say, "Where's my title?" And I think, you know, the way this thing is being run, I think there may be a fight over the family car. There may be a fight over how much television time they're allowed each week to watch, and what they have to have for breakfast. I mean, they're really acting like two children. They really are.
Well, what's really interesting is that I think at first they're going to get a lot of publicity, and a lot of the media will be in love with him, and even some actors will give him a lot of money. But eventually people will just get tired of him, and they're going to end up living, you know, wherever they're going to live. Nobody's going to answer their phone calls, and they may run out of money. It's kind of hard to live they may run out of money. Who never knows? Somebody will maybe they will repossess one of their cars one day, and we'll read about it or maybe they'll declare bankruptcy, you know, or something like that, Bill.
Yes, I think that what they're probably heading for, and what they probably really want, this is just my theory, is an hour on television every day. You know, Harry and Meghan have breakfast, and Harry and Meghan discuss the international news. And they will have guests, you know, from the really glamorous elites, and they will try to make their living that way, and they will sell products, you know. "This is Harry, and I want to recommend to you my vehicle and a good mechanic who I have, But it can end very badly. And then I think that what may happen is that Prince Charles, who apparently controls the family money, will make sure that they don't go bankrupt, that monies will flow, and that they will try to keep it secret from the press and the police.
Well, to say the least, this will be the, now that the Democrats are boring like crazy, maybe this will keep us occupied in the spring, Bill.
Well, I think it's probably the most interesting story out there. I mean, it is far more interesting than Bernie Sanders' views of Medicare. You know, I mean, which would you rather look at, a glamorous couple on the verge of destroying themselves, or Bernie coming up and saying every person is going to have an abortion, whether they need it or not, and it will be part of my bill.
That's right. No, it's hilarious. It's hilarious, but it is in many ways what's happened to politics. I mean, we've sunk to this level of such a lack of seriousness, and it's sad because we are talking about a superpower, and we are talking about very complicated problems, Bill.
You know, that's true, and all you have to do is mention the words nuclear proliferation,
yes.
And you realize, and it gets you back to reality, that there really are serious problems in this world, and they're being ignored.
Completely by these Democrat debates have ignored everything, really, incredibly. Bill, thank you very much. We're going to put you back on Global Warming Watch for the next week, so we'll stay in touch and see what you'll let us know when the flooding begins, okay?
I have my rowboat ready, and it is environmentally sound. It even has a paint that does not chip off and poison the water. So I'm ready for it.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on Urgent Agenda every day and get your updates.
Okay.
All right, Bill. Thank you so much, as always. Have a wonderful week.
Same to you. We'll talk next week again. So.
All right. Thank you so much. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, always have a lot of fun with him, always enjoy learning a great deal from him. And, of course, we're big fans of Urgent Agenda, his blog and website, and we encourage you to check it out. It's very interesting, a lot of information, and you'll learn something by following Bill and Urgent Agenda. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.